Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And happy Throwback Thursday to you. Thanks for joining us as Wake Up Call continues. Hey, I want to thank Jeff Hammond for joining us last hour. And if you missed that, you can catch it on our podcast page at podcastarena.com. Previewing, talking a little bit about the Daytona 500, which will be on Sunday. One of my favorite events of the year. I like NASCAR a lot. I spent my early days in my career covering auto racing, and I used to go to everything. And I caught the wave of NASCAR in the 90s when it started to blow up in popularity. It was really taking off, and Jeff Gordon was sort of leading the way as the new young up and coming driver. Then it leveled off a little bit, and it hasn't reached the same heights, but it is still the one event people will go, all right, I may not watch your race at Martinsville, or I may not watch your race in Chicagoland Speedway, but I'll watch the Daytona 500 because it's a big deal, and it still carries that weight. I mean, if you look at the events in this country that stand out, right, more than any other event within its sport, you know, there's a lot of horse racing that goes on, but the Kentucky Derby stands over here. There's a lot of golf tournaments, but the Masters stands over here. And in auto racing, you've got two. You've got the Indianapolis 500. Most people don't even know where the IndyCar series goes, week in and week out. And then you've got NASCAR, and it's Daytona 500. And again, a lot of people know a few tracks, but they don't know the complete schedule. And they probably don't even know half the drivers, but it's one of those events that is on the calendar that is just different than any other thing that it produces. And so that is going to, again, happen this weekend to open up. But I thought Jeff Hammond made a very interesting point about the technology and how we're getting to a point where a lot of the computer stuff that you start seeing in more advanced race cars are going into a stock car, which kind of takes the point of the stock car away. The point was that you were driving cars that looked like cars you could buy in the store, albeit paint jobs with sponsors on them and, you know, different engines. But the idea was it looked like a car you would be driving on the street. If you add a bunch of buttons and computers, that seems to be what cars have today. So maybe it's not so far-fetched. All right, we're going to do our grades for NFL teams. We're going to go to the NFC South next. And then, of course, we're going to dip over to the west side later on in this hour. Ryan Ballingy is going to join us. We'll talk about this new Saudi Golf League and how threatening it is to the PGA Tour as we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, I've been enjoying the music on this Throwback Thursday, so I like it when we have years where the music is good. So, and this has been a good one. 1968, the opening of the Basketball Hall of Fame on our Throwback Thursday. Before we get to going over the NFC South, Bucks, Saints, Falcons, and Panthers, and giving them our grades as the season is now over. One bit of note that is kind of breaking news. The Russian figure skater Kamila Valieva, who we've been talking about this week because she tested positive performance enhancing drugs, she slipped in her program today. She finished fourth, so she will not be on the podium.
You know what that means, right?
Yeah.
There will be a medal ceremony after all.
Medal ceremony after all. Okay, so Ron and I were talking about this at the break. Dan Wolkin on Twitter pointed out that Johnny Weir said, "Thank God," and Tara Levinsky said, "Yes, thank goodness." These two are really good at what they
do. They're fantastic.
Really good at what they do.
I mean, I even made the comment, like, it's hard to put them there, but they're the John Madden and Pat Summerall of their sport.
Of figure skating, yeah. They love figure skating. They don't want to be messed around with, right?
But
that's,
I mean, but they are brilliant. I mean, I could watch them. I mean, they're probably the only reason why I'll tune into figure skating besides
of course,
short dresses.
They are so good. Listen, it's you find people that are knowledgeable and passionate, and those are the people you put at the forefront who can communicate to the average fan, and you can and can sell your passion. They're selling their passion. They don't like this. They think this is an outrage. That this is outrageous.
It's not only that, but Johnny Weir doesn't care.
He doesn't care.
I mean, it's not. Take this Camila Valieva, whatever. Take her out of the equation. He's been like this ever since he jumped on. It's like he just says what he wants to say. And
he does not care.
And it is brilliant. It's like, yes, go.
So good for them. Good for them. And good for figure skating. that this young girl isn't going to medal.
Yep. Your sport gets to be legit, I guess, for another Olympics.
Right. All right, let's get to the grades of the NFC South. Let's start with Tampa Bay. Okay. I don't think I can give them anything less than an A, right? I mean, Tom Brady had an MVP season. They dealt with the Antonio Brown thing pretty swiftly. They had some missteps along the way this season, getting, beaten by the New Orleans Saints. National TV wasn't a good look, but they responded by winning three in a row to close out the season. They went to the playoffs. They lost to the Rams, in which they came back from 27-3 down. They went 13-4. I can't think of any reason to give them a B+. I'm trying.
They're that kid in the class that is just they're going to do well in the class. They're going to get an A. They don't really need to. They didn't really need to study that hard.
Yeah, is that it?
There was very little effort. And the teacher going into that semester already knows Johnny over there is going to get an A.
Right, and maybe they grade the paper, like the essay, a little like, Johnny, I expected better from your paper on the pumpkin, Alger Hiss and the pumpkin paper.
But what, I mean, but they were 13 and 3 or 13 and 4? 13 and 4.
So I can't give them anything less than an A.
Yeah, I mean, they improved for the regular season, they improved what they did last year.
Right, exactly. Now, as far as the New Orleans Saints go, I want to give them a B+, if not an A-.
Yeah.
Like, Johnny losing Jameis Winston was bad, but that was a team that stuck around in the playoff race until the very, very, very end, and it all could have gone away.
And didn't they use, like, 8 quarterbacks this season?
Yeah, and they couldn't really find one. They used Ann Book. Former Notre Dame quarterback, where you could legitimately make the case of the NFL that the New Orleans Saints were not fielding a competitive football team. Like, that was the one thing that you could have made the case of, like, saying, yeah, it was against Miami. And you could honestly go, they weren't trying to be anything in that game. Everybody was hurt. Everybody was on COVID or injured. It was a mess, absolute mess. I want to give them a B+ because they were in the playoff race. However, they almost gave it up. Remember, they were 5-2 when Winston went down. And then after that, they just wah, wah, wah. But towards the end of the season, they were like, do your job, win some games. You could still be in this thing. If San Francisco loses to the Rams, you're in the playoffs. And that would have been a miracle.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give them a B+. I can't give them an A. I can't give them the same grade as the Buccaneers.
No, because they finished short of the Buccaneers. I'm with you. I mean, you know, solid. It's teetering like on maybe between a B and a B+, just because of the adversity they had to go through.
Yeah, maybe a B. I'm going to change it. A B because Sean Payton looked at it and went, yeah, I'm done. Bye.
Yeah.
See ya. Whatever this is. I don't want this anymore.
Yeah, all I got to do is sit out a season, and then I can go and coach the Cowboys. I'll do that.
Right. I think I'll do that.
But, I mean,
so,
yeah.
So, bye.
Ian Book was a quarterback.
Ian Book.
Trevor Siemian made an appearance. Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill, who had us all fooled that he actually could be, like, a legit starting quarterback. And they went, no, Swiss Army knife. Embrace it. Love it. Live it.
Yeah.
Like, that's your thing. Cordell Stewart was the same way. Cordell Stewart screamed and hollered, and he was like, you're Slash. He goes, I don't want to be Slash. You're like, no, you're Slash. Trust us.
Is Taysom Hill the only one that, is, like, really scared now that Sean Payton is gone?
Yeah, it probably is, right?
He's probably sitting there like, well, no, he got his contract. Who cares?
Yeah, that's right. He got some money out of the deal. But, yeah, but he's not going to work here anymore. That's coming, right?
Yep.
So I'll give him a B. I'll give him a B because Sean Payton left. That's just too bad. Atlanta. What the hell's wrong with you, Atlanta? Like, I have, like, literally, name me some from the Atlanta season that stood out to you in 2021? I'll give you 10 minutes to come up with something.
Give you an hour.
Give me the one. Yeah, I'll give you an hour. Give me the one defining moment of the Atlanta Falcons season. What was it? Give me the game that set the world on fire.
We have 40 minutes left in our show.
Right.
Convince us.
Go on Twitter and tell me the moment the Atlanta Falcons stood out to you. Did they even play? Their record is 7-10, but this is a tree falls in a forest. If nobody's around to see it or hear it, does it make a sound? Is that the Atlanta Falcons?
Here's my thinking,
I'm just
going to
take the NFL's word for it that the Falcons actually had a team this year and played football.
I'm giving the, for me, it's a C-.
That's about where I'm at right
now. And this is where I'm going with this. We all always make this comment that Vontaze Burfict changed Antonio Brown forever.
Right.
You know, I mean, after that hit, Antonio Brown has never been the same. And he's just been this kind of like this recluse going on. For the Falcons, after losing, being up 28-3, they have never been the same.
Never been the same.
It is remarkable the pain these I don't know, what do you call it? Atlanteans? Is that the term we use for them? Atlantites?
I guess so. They're probably still drunk on the Braves victory. Probably the only thing I do remember of the football season was the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series.
But I mean, the pain that they must go through year in and year out, just never being able to get over that 28-3 hump. And they may never. I mean, this franchise may be doomed forever.
I mean, their wins, they're 7 wins. Giants, Jets, Dolphins when they were in their tailspin, Jaguars, Panthers who stink, and the Lions. That's their wins. Not one win stood out. Not one win stood out as, oh, that was impressive. They took down the Buccaneers like nobody's business. Nope, lost them twice. So Atlanta, you get a C- because according to the NFL, you did actually play and you won 7 games. So I'm going to take their word for it. You get a C-.
There's record of them playing.
Yeah. Carolina. This is a D, right? This is Sam Darnold. No. Bam, wham, wham. Remember Cam Newton came back and we were all like, yeah, Cam Newton. No, not that either.
He had one game.
He had that one game against Arizona.
And then he went into the situation where you didn't know what Cam Newton was.
Right.
It literally, he just came in on, you know what, first and goal, second and goal, like from the 1 yard line, and like, okay, Cam, run it in.
I'm sorry, their best quarterback was P.J. Walker. It was. I don't even know how many games he played.
Was that XFL?
XFL.
Or was that
I think it was XFL.
Was that XFL star?
Houston Roughnecks?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was XFL star. P.J. Walker.
XFL MVP?
Yeah.
That
and
never
by the way,
was.
If Christian McCaffrey plays a full season going forward, wake me up and tell me.
Is he not the NFL's version of Anthony Davis right now?
That's a good question.
Right? It's like Mr. Glass in the NFL. I mean, every time you sneeze on him, Christian McCaffrey goes down.
I made the joke when ESPN was like, we got breaking news, Christian McCaffrey. And I'm like, that's not breaking news. We expected that. Just comes on a different schedule sometimes. Sometimes it's week 13. Sometimes it's week 10. Sometimes it's week 11. It's not breaking news. We were just sending our watch to it whenever you were going to mention that Christian McCaffrey would be out for the rest of the season. Stop with that. Give me a break. That's the expectation. Can you squeeze 8-9 games out of Christian McCaffrey? Maybe 10. Maybe 10 one year. It'll be fantastic. No, this team was a mess. This team was an absolute mess. Matt Rhule, I'm blown away he's keeping his job there. Blown away. I thought if anybody needs to run to college football immediately, it's Matt Rhule.
Yeah,
get
run
the hell
back
out of there. Run right back. Dave Aranda just got an extension at Baylor through 2029. The guy that replaced you, like, you go back to college. I'd rather deal with NIL than deal with this mess of a franchise. God bless them. Anyway, they started 3-0 and everybody was impressed.
They were like Broncos 3-0.
Yeah, they were just like, yuck. Yeah, they beat the Jets, the Saints, and Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah. But now, yeah, and Darnold threw for like over 300 yards in each game or something, and everyone's like, oh, look at Darnold. Nah, it didn't last. So you get a D. All right, so those are our grades. That was that might have been the worst division in the NFL based on circumstances. I mean, the NFC East, I'm looking at like, and the Jacksonville and Houston making the NFC AFC South kind of a mess.
Well, we can say that, you know, both South divisions were just dog, you know what?
Dog, you know it. We will have the West coming up next. Speaking of divisions where the grades might be up, that's next as we continue with Wake Up Call. And Ryan Ballingee is going to join us to talk about the Saudi Golf League this hour and how it rivals the PGA Tour and will it actually take place. That's next as we continue with Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue Wake Up Call. Ryan Ballingee coming up in 13 minutes. Let's talk a little golf. We get ready for the Genesis Invitational at the Riviera Country Club. Did you ever go to that one, Mr. Southern California?
Nope.
Did you ever go to Riviera?
Never went to the Riviera. I drove by it.
Yeah.
But never went to it.
Riviera, that's where Tiger Woods made his...
Where he
young
cut his
debut,
teeth, right?
Right? Yeah, like he was like 16 or something, and he played in the L.A. Open at Riviera. And
as an amateur?
As an amateur. And famously, one of the golfers in his pairing, who's not a famous person, said afterwards, that kid is going to be a megastar. He just knew that kid at 16 had... Like, can you imagine being like 30 years old, professional golfer? You've been the best of everywhere you've been. You've been the best, right? Junior golf, high school golf, college golf. You're good enough to be a touring professional, not a club pro or a road pro. You're going on the PGA Tour. You have every shot, high fade, low draw, stinger. Everything's in your bag. And a 16-year-old kid, and you watch him play, and you go, "Oh crap, I can't do any of those things." That must have been demoralizing. Like, oh, no, that kid's got everything. I'm not going to be able to keep up with this. He's draining 30-foot putts like they're nothing. So, yeah, the L.A. Open, that starts this week. We're going to talk to Ryan Ballingee, though, about the Saudi Golf League, the one that's Phil Mickelson has been talked to. All the stars around the world have been, like, coaxed to go play in and be a part of, but the PGA Tour is fighting back on that. They don't want to lose its star power. But nevertheless, we're going to go through our NFL grades, and this is the final division in the NFL. We did the AFC yesterday, and we've done the NFC today. But this is the NFC West. So let's start with the Super Bowl champions, the LA Rams. That's an A++.
Yep.
12-5, and you had to win it. You had to win this, and you did. You gave up everything to win it, and you did. You were criticized for giving up all those picks because we love picks in this country. We love the future. We love the draft, and you're not going to be a part of it. And you won the Super Bowl. So an A++ for the Rams.
No, it's that famous meme that we always see with Thanos, right? Like, right. What did it cost you? Everything.
Everything.
But they have a Lombardi.
They got the Lombardi.
Gronky did it.
They did it. They did it.
And they cashed in on doing it, too, which is even more impressive that we knew by, you know, midway through the season, okay, you know, the Rams are all in. And the fact that they achieved that is, I mean, that's why they deserve an A+. I mean, if that didn't work out for them, we're looking at what, C?
Yeah, and think about all the things that could have happened along the way, right? They could have lost to Tampa Bay if they don't hit Cooper Kupp, if Stafford doesn't hit Cooper Kupp. And what if the Buccaneers got that ball back? What if it went into overtime, right? Then they could have lost to a team that had beaten them 6 straight times. They were down double digits in that game against San Francisco. But they overcame that too. So an A++ for the Rams. Real quick, there was a rumor about Sean McVay possibly retiring and going into TV. And I think I now know why. Because I think he looks at the future and goes, ugh.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, listen, I'm a Super Bowl winning coach. Like if you're 35 and you're getting your first job in the NFL with a team in cap hell, you'll take it because you want that first job. I'm a Super Bowl champion. I ain't coaching a team.
I thought it was because he was going to stay home with his model girlfriend,
with his model,
fiance,
Ukrainian
wife, whatever
model
it is.
Girlfriend. Oh yeah. Lord. She's another one.
But she posted to, I think to the gram and said no, he is not retiring.
Good.
And he gave
he
a thumbs
shouldn't.
Up.
He should. I think that was just
come
a
on,
buzz.
36? Come on.
36. Yeah, and you know what, coach, and step up to the challenge of coaching a team that may lose Aaron Donald and certain players, and you have no draft picks, and you got to make some tough decisions. Just step up to the challenge. All right, what about Arizona? What are we doing with the Cardinals here? They went 11-6.
All right, when's the cutoff of judging this team?
Right. Point do we go?
Is it kind of like the NFL MVP that, you know, or the Super Bowl MVP? Like, you know, from the 2-minute warning on, you couldn't vote because after the 2-minute warning, it easily would have been Aaron Donald.
Right. So where do we cut off?
I'm
looking at their schedule. At week of 13, a win against the Bears put them at 10-2. At this point, it's an A all the way through.
Yeah.
They're one of the top teams in the NFL. Kyler Murray is on pace to be an MVP, too. It's just working out. However it's working out. And remember, they had a bad loss to Carolina, but that's excusable. Every team does that. But they had that loss to Green Bay where DeAndre Hopkins didn't turn around, right? It was DeAndre Hopkins, wasn't it? Kyler Murray threw the pass?
Yeah.
And he didn't turn? It was a botched last play. Anyway, after that, they lost 4 of 5 to close out the season and then didn't show up at all in their playoff matchup with the Rams at all.
And is that where we cut it off right there?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so far up to that point, I'm going B-. Because you made the playoffs. You had a good run for the first, 60% of the season, maybe 70% of the season. You had a good run. After the playoffs, it's like, I almost want to cut it off there. Because right now, that B- might be a D+.
D+, exactly. I think we keep it to the season because I agree with you. What's going on now is a mess.
It's a little unfair to include the squabble. I mean, I don't even know what to call it.
It's whatever it is.
Social media to say, oh, I'm deleting your photos because I don't like you anymore.
And then I'm not part of the nonsense. Yeah. Enough. I'm giving them a B-. I think they overachieved. I didn't think they would be that good when they were good. But boy, oh boy, it's like flunking the final exam after getting A's on all your tests during the semester.
Exactly.
They flunked out that final exam. They lost 4 of 5. They looked like crap. And then they get to that playoff game, and then they disappeared. Kyler Murray threw one of the worst passes in the history of the National Football League in that game. It was that bad. And the Rams exploded on him. And so, again, they failed the final exam. So I'm going to give them a B-.
I think that's B-. I think that's fair. Not include your extracurricular stuff.
Yeah, you showed us you were a good student, and then you failed. But at one point, you were one of the best teams in the NFL.
Yeah.
So, all right, how about San Francisco?
It's another one.
This is another one. They made the playoffs. They went on the road and beat the Cowboys. They went on the road and beat the Packers. They almost beat the Rams on the road. They did go during the regular season 10-7. Jimmy Garoppolo did just enough to keep them around in the conversation. They had to win their final game of the year to get into the playoffs. Had they lost, the Saints would have been in, and they won it. But were you ever scared of San Francisco? Did you ever feel like they always seemed beatable? Every week they always seemed like everyone was going to turn into a pumpkin.
Well, it felt like defensively they were solid.
Defensively they were solid.
And offensively is where it was like defense had to pitch shutouts just to keep them in the game.
But at the same time, Debo Samuel emerged as a megastar.
I feel like out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. He's been fantastic. Elijah Mitchell can run the football. Again, Garoppolo, he does just enough to keep you around. That's what he does. He wins games, and they did. They won. They won 7 of their last 9 games from Week 10 in to give them their record. Remember, at one point they had lost 4 straight, and they were 3-5, and they turned the season around. I do remember when I talked about whether anyone was ever scared of them. I do remember that the Tennessee Titans played them, and people were like, "Yeah, I don't know if I want San Francisco now." So, what would you give San Francisco?
Like B+.
B+. I give them a B+. Good playoff run.
Yeah.
Good playoff run. It makes up for the mess at the beginning of the season. Seattle? That's a D.
Yeah, easy.
Easy. That's a disappointing D. D for disappointment. What a mess. That's 7-10. You could have told me they were 3-13. I would have believed you.
Yep.
I'm another
surprised
one.
You told me they were 7. I didn't even know their record. 7 yep. and 10. I'm thinking you're lying.
Exactly.
It's a beautiful morning. Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, 1968 on the Throwback Thursday, the opening of the Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. But let's go out to the Progressive Guests line. Progressive making it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Ryan Ballinger joins us. Golf News Net is the website as the Genesis Invitational getting started today at Riviera Country Club. And some other news and notes from around the world of golf. How are you, Ryan?
Good, Tony. How are you?
Good. All right. Let's talk about this tournament real quick. It was the LA Open. It's now Genesis Invitational, but it's played at the Riviera Country Club. This is an old course, but does it still hold up in the modern game of golf?
Absolutely. I've had the good fortune of playing this place a couple of years ago, pre-pandemic, and it is one of the greatest golf courses this country has. I think it's actually even underrated for how good it is. And I think the field this week, not only having Tiger Woods as host, but this golf course is a big draw for a lot of these players because there's kind of a correlation in performance between this golf course and Augusta National. I think a lot of these stars this week are going to take this as a measuring stick for where they are heading into the Masters in a couple months.
Yeah, this is part of the West Coast swing. Is this when golfers, okay, look, I may play one or two events, but this is when I start kicking in a schedule?
It's kind of changed in recent memory. I think we used to think of the Florida swing as when the season really started to get underway. I think that has kind of changed now. I think a number of players who may go overseas to the United Arab Emirates kind of kick off their year there. Then you've got Torrey Pines as kind of one of the marquee fields of the year. And then you've got Phoenix, which has only increased in stature and quality of field in recent memory. But this kind of feels like the event of the early season now, because you've got Tiger hosting, you've got all the world top 10, you've got 35 of the world top 50. You have a field strength that is better than the 2020 Masters field. So this is a really big field this week. I think this is really the quote unquote kickoff of the season now.
I think I want to get your thoughts on last week at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, because there has been so much social media attention for even non-golfers on the 16th hole and the hole in one and the crowd. And it really was fun to watch, but in terms of tournaments, would they love to replicate that kind of thing, but they can't?
I don't think it's that every tournament wants that. I think some tournaments have tried to achieve some semblance of that. Honda Classic next week comes to mind with the bear trap. They have kind of made it a boozy stretch from 15 to 17 for the fans, and that's paid off for them. And then there are other tournaments that kind of do it in their own way, so to speak. You've got TPC River Highlands hosting the Travelers Championship. They kind of have a really cool finish, 15, 16, 17, and put a lot of fans there. But there's nothing quite like what we get at Phoenix. I would say the players maybe even attempts to do that with 16 and 17 and kind of 18T, which is a really great amphitheater to watch the end of the tournament. But again, nothing quite to that level. And I think the PGA Tour and its tournaments have kind of come to the conclusion it's pretty much impossible to beat what they've got going there.
I agree. I think if you tried to replicate it, it would almost be embarrassing because it felt like, because this was organic. It just was a popular hole. They started building stuff around it. And now it become what they didn't create it originally and say, wouldn't it be fun if it was like this? It sort of grew over time.
Right. I think you can even go back to the Tiger Woods hole in one there in 1998 and the beer shower that he got. And I think that really started to set the scene for what has now become the true golf stadium, an amphitheater unlike any other in our game. And that's even expanded from there because there's been so much popularity around 16. Now you've got 17 as a drivable par four that has increased corporate presence, more fans sitting on it during the day. You got 15 the hole before, which is a great risk reward par five. Again, more fans there. They have kind of spread out the people beyond 16 because so many people are interested in that hole.
Speaking of Tiger, I know he spoke just before this Genesis Invitational, just doing a kind of a press conference. But he did play with his son this winter. Where is he saying he's at? Where do we think he's at?
He's kind of left us on a little bit of a cliffhanger here. I mean, he says he can walk pretty easily in straight lines on flat surfaces. He can play cart golf where you just drive up basically the ball, walk a couple feet, hit, and get back in the cart. But that walking a golf course, walking a championship golf course with all the undulations and different hills and where your feet sit on every shot, not always flat, he's not there yet. He's not ready for that. He hasn't prepared for that. And I think with less than 50 days until the Masters, 7 weeks till the Masters today, I don't see a situation suddenly arising where he's going to be ready to play in the Masters, but that doesn't mean he's not going to try. I think he kind of set the bar for, yeah, I probably will not going to play the Masters, but I would like to give it a shot, and I think that's where he leaves it.
Yeah, I'm going to tap into your memory. Did he go to be part of the whole Masters event when he was injured and couldn't play, wear the jacket, go to the dinner, be around, or does he usually stay away from that?
He likes to do the champions dinner when possible. I mean, it's just one of those kind of epic nights in golf, and it's one of those small, very, very small clubs in professional golf that they really get to enjoy that night. So I think that's something he's going to take part in regardless. He did give a sense that he was asked about whether he'd be interested in competing in the par three contest if he didn't play in the Masters. He seemed to kind of indicate some interest in that, but I think largely speaking, he would show up for the champions dinner and then just walk away. I don't think he's going to be there if he's not a competitor.
All right, let's get to some other news and notes around golf and the Saudi Golf League and the controversies that around that. First, before we get to the controversy, what is it and how? What does it entail? What makes it enticing?
Yeah, so the kind of Saudi government public investment fund has been charged with by the Crown Prince, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, of more or less coming up with different ways to bring people to Saudi Arabia and be interested in investing in the country and outside of petroleum, outside of exporting oil. And sport is one thing that they've really come up with. They've invited WWE. They pay large sums of money to the World Wrestling Entertainment folks. They do F1, Formula One. They do all kinds of different sports. They try to bring into Saudi Arabia under this guise that having these big events there will normalize Saudi Arabia on the world stage. And they have come to the conclusion that creating a golf league is a really good way to do that. And so they've come up with this idea of having a limited size league, an all-star league, so to speak, of 48, 52, 40 different multiples of four players and have them compete on teams of four players. And they would play in this series of events, 10, 12, 15 events, somewhere in that range. And some of them would be in the United States. Many of them would be by the rumors. Some would be elsewhere around the world, including in Saudi Arabia. And these events would have an individual component and a team component for an enormous guaranteed purse every week, something like $20, $25 million. And this series of events, again, would run relatively short because there wouldn't be a long season. You wouldn't have a 47-week season like you do on the PGA Tour. You'd have a very limited number of events. And the Saudis are reportedly offering enormous sums of money to star players to sign with them and compete in their league, anything from the rumored $135 million for Bryson DeChambeau to sign to $100 million to Phil Mickelson and Dustin Johnson to something closer to $30 million for Ian Poulter and Lee Westwood. And so there's all of this kind of will they, won't they, very secretive backroom stuff about whether anyone has actually signed the dotted line with the Saudis, who they're going to be, when they might announce it, and when this thing might start, if it ever starts.
All right, so I understand there's the geopolitical angle to this, and I understand why people are saying that. But from a golf business standpoint, that sounds like a pretty good deal. Why are people not jumping into this?
I think the Colin Morikawa and Rory McIlroy have put it really well, and they did this week again, and they have been very vociferous in coming out against it, along with pretty much every player under 35 that's a superstar in golf. It's pretty much that they're sticking with the PGA Tour. And I think the fundamental reason for that is they don't know the unknown. They don't know how long this could last. They don't know what happens if their contract expires. They don't know if they lose their form, what their life looks like after that. They know that the PGA Tour has said, if you sign with the Saudis, you are banned from being on the PGA Tour. And I have every reason to believe that the PGA Tour will follow through with that threat. So for a younger player, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to risk everything, including potential access to the major championships, just so you can take a guaranteed payday, especially with the increase in purses that the PGA Tour has seen this year, increase the FedEx Cup, increase to all kinds of different ways to access money on the PGA Tour, and all the stuff that you throw away by going with the Saudis, because you're probably going to lose sponsorships, because you're not going to have as much domestic TV exposure, you're not going to have really the same kind of clean-cut image, because a lot of that's going to be tarnished. Again, you mentioned for geopolitical reasons. But for older players, they're weighing what they have left versus what they can get in cash. Because, I mean, Phil Mickelson, he's the reigning PGA champion, but his days as a viable PGA Tour contender week to week are over. And he may be dominating PGA Tour Champions events, the 50-plus circuit when he plays. But if they're throwing at him $100 million to sign on the dotted line to play in their league, that seems kind of like a no-brainer for him probably. Same thing with Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter, guys who we thought would be European Ryder Cup captains in the next few years. But the European Tour, the DP World Tour, as they're now called, has said, if you sign with the Saudis, you're not involved with the Ryder Cup anymore. So they're willing to throw that away for the money that's potentially on offer to them. So I think Rory McIlroy put it really well yesterday, and it's a really good slam if you want to think about it that way. He said, I don't think the Saudis are interested in forming a pre-champions tour, but from the names that have kind of been rumored to be going along with this, outside of Bryson DeChambeau, who's in his 20s, everybody else is at least 37 years old. They're all in their 30s and 40s and 50s. So you're essentially building an all-star tour around a bunch of guys who are on the decline. And on the other side, you've got all these PGA Tour guys who are younger. We're like, I'm going to stake my claim here, and I'm going to go with this.
You mentioned earlier about how the country is WWE, Formula One, golf. There's that term sports washing where these countries go, hey, we'll bring in sports. It's sports. And then you kind of hoping our image in your mind changes and you kind of forget why we're controversial in the first place. Phil Mickelson, he's a global icon. Does he, the money's great, but does he want to be asked questions about this all the time for the rest of his life?
I don't think he's thought this out very well in total candor. And I know Phil's a smart guy and I think he's kind of blinded by his regard to the PGA Tour. I mean, he has long said privately and now increasingly publicly how he feels about the tour holding back his media rights images and his ability to use his personal likeness without their consent and all of that stuff. And those are legitimate gripes. There are plenty of legitimate gripes players can have with the PGA Tour and how they function, but he has made that public. And now he's kind of aligned himself with a controversial body that wants to pay him a lot of money to walk away from that. And I don't think that's really reputationally helping.
Right.
I think in the long haul, and most of the reaction I've seen, and again, this is my little universe, but most of the reaction I've seen is, well, if you're doing this for the money and you're doing it with a hostile government, why should I pay attention? Like, enjoy the money, we won't miss you kind of thing. And
right,
I think we have seen, especially this week from young players and a bunch of PGA Tour players, an increasing united front of, all right, bye, Felicia. We'll see you later. And that's the end of it for them. And I think a lot of fans are prepared to say the same thing for a variety of reasons. One of them being, where is it going to be on TV? If it's a bunch of global events, I'm not getting up in the middle of the night to watch a bunch of guys in their late 30s, 40s, and 50s play golf. And it's just a concept that screams free money instead of competitive golf where you have to earn your keep week to week. I think fans will be turned off by that as well.
Real quick, 60 seconds, but Greg Norman, is he the pitch guy for this? And is he feeling those same effects for pitching this?
Yeah, I mean, he's the CEO of a company called Liv, L-I-V, 54 Roman numeral Golf Investments. And they're the front company the Saudis created to form this golf league. And they've hired tons and tons of people from the PGA Tour and other walks of life and entertainment TV rights, all that stuff. They've got a very sizable and significantly experienced executive team. I think kind of people know Greg Norman in the golf world is a guy who's an egomaniac, a guy who's kind of pursuing this as a big middle finger to the PGA Tour because he tried to do this 20, almost 30 years
ago. You're right.
Ago
World with, Golf Tour, and, right?
Exactly. And that got exactly absorbed by the PGA Tour, turned into the World Golf Championships, and that was that. And I think he's still out for revenge 30 years later, and this kind of is a transparent way of him doing that.
Ryan, great stuff as always. We love having you on, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
You got it. That's Ryan Ballinger. GolfNewsNet is his website. It's really good stuff to check it out there as we get closer and closer to the major season in the world of golf. We'll come back, wrap up this hour as we continue with Wake Up Call.
Hey Jude, don't make it bad. Take a side.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And it has been a great day of music on this Throwback Thursday from 1968. Congratulations, Hall of Fame, Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. And happy birthday on this date. Ryan was good. I liked it. I'll give my thoughts here real quick. I'll get yours as well, Ron. I do think, you know, if you're Phil Mickelson, you got all the money in the world. That's great. I do think you do have to be concerned about your image going forward. You're still a relatively young man at 51 years old. You're going to want to do a lot of business deals. You're going to want to stay active and busy. I do think that being asked over and over again about why you got involved in something like this, I think would be too daunting. I don't think I'd want any part of it.
I mean,
it would bog me down and be like, I get it. They throw people off buildings and they execute people for smallest of things. And they don't have a great human rights record for all sorts of people. But I wanted the money. What do you want from me?
Well, I still think they're going to be asked to come play anyways, regardless if they're in the Super League.
Wait a minute. Asked what?
For years and years, these guys have been invited over to Abu Dhabi and places like time just to play in one tournament, just because they want to sell tickets.
Yeah. You mean being invited to go to Saudi Arabia?
Yeah. If they don't get the big names to sign on full time, I kind of get the feeling like, you know, there might still be an offer out there. Maybe not in their first year or two.
Yeah.
But you know, like you said, I mean, if you're Phil, you don't need that headache.
No, you don't need the headache, because I think. In the end, I think there'd be a difference between going to one tournament in Saudi Arabia and then partnering up with the Saudi government's golf league.
Yeah.
Where you know why they're doing it, right? They're doing it. Look, soccer, F1, wrestling, all of these events that have been part of this, they all have been asked the same questions. They all be asked, what do you have to say about their... It's a hard position to be in. To be in bed with them permanently, you'd be asked it all the time. All right, we'll be back tomorrow on Friday's edition. Continue. Keep it here on Sports Map Radio.